Okay. Now, when the man replies in verse 36, or asks the question, "Who is he, sir, that I may believe?" And the word "believe" that he uses is not present tense, but aorist. Believe, aorist tense, is point action. Point action. And what that is saying, then, if we would translate it, who is he, Lord, that I may come to believe, or come to the point of faith, that I may come to believe? That tells several things that the man knows. The act of believing is to be decisive and definite. The act of believing is definite, historical, decisive. It's definite and decisive. Remember in Acts 16:31, you had it the other way around, where the Philippian jailer says to the Lord, "What must I do to be saved?" and uses the present tense. "What must I keep on doing? What habit must I form to be saved?" And Acts 16:31 replies with an aorist: believe. It is a definite, decisive, definitive act of faith that you need to understand. The man also reflects something else about his faith. He understands by his words that the object of faith is the issue. He understands that the object of faith is the issue. I need to come to believe decisively, and that faith has to have definite direction, and that's expressed in the words a little weakly in English, "that I may believe," verse 36. Who is he, Lord, that I may come to believe, decisively believe? And then the words "in him" have the word "in" translating a very powerful little preposition, eis, E-I-S. And eis, basal meaning of that preposition, always is direction toward. Might put it this way. It funnels the action of the verb. Funnels the action of the verb to the proper object. Eis funnels the action of the verb to the proper object. And so the man understands it's not just believing. It's the kind of believing that is directed toward the proper object. The proper object is him. Therefore, you can understand that the man had a good grasp of what faith is. We mentioned earlier, you might want to note it with this verse, when we read the words, "and he worshiped him," this is the only place in the Gospel of John where anyone is said to worship Jesus. With that, we have the condemnation of the Pharisees, and this is what John loves. In the life of one man, we've seen, remember, we go clear back as far as chapter 8, "I am the light of the world." We have seen the effect of the light on this one man. Now, what is the effect of the light upon those who refuse to see it? That's 39 through 41. Jesus said, "For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see." And I take it we have left physical seeing, and we are talking about spiritual perception, spiritual sight. "For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see spiritually may come to see spiritually, and that those who see spiritually in their own eyes and in their own mind may become blind spiritually." The disciples, having heard this, the Pharisees are naturally going to think that he's going to say what? you guys are blind. He doesn't say that. He says it's worse than blindness. Those of the Pharisees, verse 40, who were with him heard these things and said to him, "We are not blind too, are we?" And the Lord did not say yes. Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no sin." And that does not mean sinless. It simply means by being blind, an absence of all truth. You can't say you do not have truth. Because you have truth, you're more responsible. If you were blind, let's see, I'm paraphrasing. If you were blind, you'd have an excuse. But you're worse than blind. You say, "We see." Thus, your sin remains. Blindness in the light of truth would be somewhat excusable. But to claim that you have all the answers and then treat Jesus the way you do, your sin remains. Now, with that, and it's a good place to transition over to chapter 10, because chapter 10 has a lot to say in terms of its content about this preceding chapter. So we'll caption the whole thing, "The Good Shepherd." It's the theme of chapter 10. Long chapter also, 10:1 through 42. And a few things to introduce the chapter. Just opening observations. Number one, this 10th chapter of John, which is full of the teaching of Jesus and public teaching of the Lord, this is the last public address of Jesus in John. Underscore now, public address. This is the last public address by Jesus in John. Of course, you will have the upper room discourse, which is extensive, and you have lots of teaching left. But basically now, as far as John is concerned, Jesus will never again in the rest of this book, and we're not even quite halfway through it, will never again, as far as John's perspective is concerned, John says, "I'm through with the public addresses of Jesus. There will be no more as far as this book is concerned." Two, notice opening chapter 10 is going to be built around a metaphor of a shepherd. "Truly I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber. But he who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep." Sheep, shepherd, metaphor. The metaphor is going to be one of a good shepherd. What is a good shepherd like? What does a good shepherd do? How does he relate to the sheep? And that metaphor will be used in this context to do two things. Number one, he will use it to distinguish himself from the false shepherds. Jesus will use this to distinguish himself from the false. And he will do so by pointing out the things that a good shepherd does, the way a good shepherd acts, and the way the false shepherd acts. And the contrast will be, the false shepherds threw you out. "I'm the good shepherd. I will die for you." And they could hardly deny, but those were good characteristics. And therefore, the distinction between Jesus and the Pharisees, the religious leaders, is going to become sharp. The second thing he uses this metaphor to do, and it's very important in chapter 10, to teach the voluntary nature of his death. To teach the voluntary nature of his death. This will be where he will say, "No man takes my life from me. No man could possibly do that. I give my life voluntary." Teach the voluntary of his death. Keep in mind, Jesus is the only person who ever died voluntarily. Repeat, he is the only person ever to die voluntarily. You say, well, what about people who die for other people? Well, when people die for other people, there's a point at which it's no longer voluntary. I mean, you stepped in front of the bullet and it's in your chest, and you voluntarily did that. Well, are you ready now to back out and say, I wish I hadn't done that. I want to back out. Jesus, at no point, was killed by the cross from the divine standpoint. Remember, his last words were what? Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit. Totally voluntary, all the way to the end, and that teaching will come up in chapter 10 that no man takes my life, but I give it. Another point of introduction that is important is how the Old Testament thoroughly castigates bad shepherds. The Old Testament thoroughly castigates shepherds who do not do their who do not fulfill their duty. And let's take two sample passages just to get that. And these are only sample passages. We could go to Zechariah. We could go numerous places, but let's go to Isaiah 59. We'll look at Isaiah and Jeremiah. And what we want to keep up, or what the thing we want to catch, is how the Old Testament thoroughly castigates the bad shepherd. Isaiah chapter 23. We'll not comment much on it. It's very self-explanatory. I'm sorry, Isaiah chapter 56. Isaiah 56. Verses 9 through 12. Notice the biting criticism of the shepherds and the leaders who do not do their job. Verse 9. All you beasts of the field, all you beasts of the forest, come to eat. His watchmen are blind. All of them know nothing. All of them are dumb dogs, unable to bark. And that's cutting sarcasm. You know, there's not much information in a dog's bark. You're so dumb you can't even bark. You can't even give meaningless information, much less doctrine. All of them are dumb dogs, unable to bark, dreamers lying down who love to slumber. And the dogs are greedy. They're not satisfied. And they are shepherds who have no understanding. They have all turned to their own way, each one to his unjust gain, to the last one. Come, they say, let us get wine, let us drink heavily of strong drink, and tomorrow will be like today, only more so. Jeremiah 23. Jeremiah 23. I want to get the flavor of how bad it is to be a bad shepherd. 23 verse 1. Woe to the shepherds who are destroying and scattering the sheep of my pasture, declares the Lord. Therefore, thus says the Lord God of Israel concerning the shepherds who are tending my people. You have scattered my flock, driven them away. You have not attended them. Behold, I am about to attend to you for the evil of your deeds, declares the Lord. Then I myself will gather the remnant of my flock out of all the countries where I have driven them, bring them back to their pasture, and they will be fruitful and multiply. I will also raise up shepherds over them. They will tend them, and they will not be afraid any longer, nor terrified, nor will it be missing. The Old Testament castigates very thoroughly the bad shepherd. Now, in the metaphor, there are ideas that are involved in the shepherd metaphor. Basically, in our minds, are twofold. Care, concern, spiritual food. And we think of that as the shepherd. There's one note, however, we need to add to that that is very present in the Old Testament in many passages. Not only was the shepherd to care for, to be concerned for, to provide food for, to tend for, but the shepherd was also sovereign. The shepherd metaphor carries the idea of sovereignty. So when we think of shepherd in terms of care and concern, in biblical times, the shepherd was also an autocrat. Many passages emphasize that sovereignty. Look at Revelation 2. Revelation 2 and verse 27. Speaking of the rule of Christ, it says, He shall rule. And let's see, what do we got? Yeah, notice that in your margin there, one by the word rule, and the margin says shepherd. It's the word poimeno. A poimen is a shepherd. He shall shepherd them with a rod of iron. As the vessels of the potter are broken, as I also have received authority from my Father, and so forth. So notice the rule of Christ is a shepherding rule, but the shepherd had authority. Often in the Old Testament, the king was called a shepherd. In fact, the shepherd in the Old Testament was the king of the Old Testament, which was David. So add to this then, when he talks about shepherding, the idea of authority is also present. All right, now let's break down, again, we're still in introduction. Let's break down the elements, or the chief element in this metaphor. Reading verse 1 of chapter 10. Truly I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold for the sheep. And the chief element revolves about the fold. Greek word ole. What was an ole? What was a fold? Several elements. A fold was basically a courtyard. And it was a courtyard that was enclosed all the way around, but it had an open top. When it was used for sheep, it was enclosed with anywhere from a 10 to 12 foot wall. So if you want to make an aerial view of it, you've got this box down there, and in the box are sheep, and obviously a sheep cannot go over a 10 or 12 foot wall. Why did they do this? Well, they did this, its primary purpose was to keep the sheep at night. So the primary purpose of an ole was protection at night, not only from outside danger, but to keep the sheep from wandering off where you couldn't find them in the dark. You have to keep in mind that in these times, night was a big thing. I mean, they didn't just screw in a light bulb out in the barn. It was dark. Dark, dark. So that the protection was needed. And if we look at it from the top view, there was at one point an opening. And in the opening, you had a door. And at that door was a keeper. The keeper stood at the door. He was there to ward off thieves, robbers, sheep stealers. He was there to ward off wild animals. And when we say the keeper stood at the door, we ought to take that a little further for the metaphor that's here. He not only stood at the door, he was the door. So that's the imagery that is going to be built on in this passage. Now, throughout, and this is our last point of introduction, 6. Very important to recognize that in John chapter 10, there are 3 doors. The first is the entrance door. Verses 1 and 2. And notice a unique thing about the entry door. And the unique thing about this entrance door, and we need to be careful with this passage because perhaps you've heard someone attempt to preach the gospel using John chapter 10 with the door and so forth. You can't do that until you get to chapter 10 and verse 9. Because the door is entirely different in the early part of the chapter. As we looked at that diagram, you would say, well, at nighttime, the sheep go in the door. But notice chapter 10 and verse 1 and 2. Truly, I say to you, he who does not enter by the door into the fold of the sheep, but climbs up some other way, he is a thief and a robber. Now catch this. Who uses this entry door spoken of in verses 1 and 2? He who enters by the door is a shepherd. Notice, it is the shepherd that used the entry door. So the entrance door is used in this metaphor by the shepherd only. That's 1 and 2. What is going to be built there is the shepherd. The fold is going to represent Israel. And Jesus is going to be the only one who has the credentials to be the shepherd of Israel. Keep this now in context of the religious leaders and the Pharisees, who are the ones that have come over the wall in a different way. By the way, can you think why in verses 1 and 2, the fold cannot be heaven? Why can it not be heaven? Because some people got in the legitimate way. Some people climbed over the walls. Now, that hardly fits, that there'll be people in heaven that they didn't come, you know, like Christ is the way, the truth. They didn't come that way. They scaled a wall into heaven. And all of a sudden, you find out that doesn't fit because there are those in the fold that are there illegitimately. They're not true sheep. So that X's out that the fold here in any way refers to heaven. And for the same reason, it cannot refer to the sheep. Cannot refer to the church. So not only can it be entered improperly, and this fold, again, keep in mind, this fold may be entered illegitimately. The fold may be entered illegitimately. And what we will find out is that the Pharisees had scaled the wall into the fold of Israel. The only one that came in the door the proper way is Jesus, the true shepherd. So we have an entrance door. We also have an exit door. And that's in verses 3 and 4. Now, the true shepherd that went in the door, what does he do with the sheep? Notice, his ministry is to lead them out of the fold. Not into, out of. Verse 3. To him the doorkeeper opens, probably parallel to John the Baptist, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. Notice, the true shepherd comes along to bring the sheep out of the fold at this point. And those are important basic things to see that is being said here. We ought to stop by saying and see what is the meaning of that. If you think of the fold as Israel, a little diagram down here somewhere. Okay, here it is. Here's what we've got in John 10, the first verses. You've got the wall scalers, the Pharisees. And they're thieves and robbers. The key to being a thief is to be a deceiver. A robber uses force. The New Testament Greek preserves the same distinction that we have in English, though most people are not aware of it. People will go home and find out their house has been broken into, and they say, "I've been robbed." And that's not true. You were burglarized. You were not robbed. Robbery involves a force, such as a gun or a knife or a threat or something of that sort. If you go out in the parking lot, someone throws you down and holds you there and takes your money, you have been robbed. But if you go home and your house is broken, then you've been burglarized. The idea of robbery is violence, force. And so those that scale the wall are thieves. And the key there is deception. Thief is successful only if he can be deceptive. And a robber, and the key there is violence. The Pharisees that we've had in chapter 9 got into the fold of Israel by deception and violence. By violence, you go back to chapter 9 and verse 28. Says they reviled him and said, "You're his disciple, we're disciples of Moses." And again, the throwing him out of the temple is all violent. They were there by deception, and that's the way they ruled. Jesus, on the other hand, goes in the door. And there are three ways that, or three things about his characteristic. And that comes down to verse 2 of chapter 10. He who enters by the door is a shepherd of the sheep. And so, number one, to the nation, this represents Israel now, the fold. To the nation, he had legitimate credentials. He didn't scale the wall. He went in the door. The Pharisees climbed over the walls. Not only did he have legitimate credentials in verse 2, but to him the doorkeeper opens. So he is presented by the proper doorkeeper. Or we'll interpret, he was presented by the doorkeeper, John. And when he gets in, he is greeted by the proper sheep. And that's in verse 4. When he puts forth all his own. Go back to verse 3. To him the doorkeeper opens, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calls his sheep by name. We just had one, didn't we, in chapter 9? He went up to the sheepfold of Israel. And he called a name, and out came a sheep. And so you have, to him, verse 3, the doorkeeper opens, the sheep hear his voice. He calls his own sheep by name and leads them out. And when he puts forth all his own, so what have you got? In Israel, you have mixed sheep. True sheep, false sheep. How do you separate the true sheep from the false sheep? What is it? Jesus comes to Israel, presents his credentials, and the true sheep see them. This man was born blind, and one of the miracles performed by Jesus was to make him see. The intent of the miracles, John 20, 30, and 31, was to prove that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and the man saw the miracle, he heard his words, and he came out of Israel. Not voluntarily, but these were brought out by being thrown out, and he associates himself with the shepherd. And so we ought to have, with Jesus, primarily think are his words, and out comes a sheep. Now, something needs to be added to that. And the something that needs to be added to that is the fact that all of the true sheep that he is going to call by his word are not in Israel, are they? Chapter 10, verse 16. I have other sheep which are not of this fold, not Israelites. I must bring them also, they shall hear my voice, and they shall become one flock with one shepherd. So can you see what he's saying? Here's the nation of Israel, full of mixed sheep, been deceived and violated by the Pharisees. Along comes John the Baptist saying, here's your shepherd. And the shepherd doesn't climb the wall, he goes in the door. And when he goes in the door, the test for mixed sheep is his word. And when his word is spoken, you have, as we've already started out tonight, diverse responses. Some hear his word and respond, some hear his word and do not. And he takes them out, and over here, he is going to form his own new flock. Now, with that, it's very interesting. If there's anything, and I've heard this testified to many, many times, put in a group 10 sheep that belong to 10 different shepherds, and each shepherd will say his word, and his sheep will break out of the group. I recall seeing that just dramatically once in about 1970 in Israel. Here you see this enormous flock of sheep, and here were shepherds standing around, and when the shepherd was ready to move on, he would speak, and these sheep would be thousands of them, all mixed in. And pretty soon, when he gave his word, a sheep here, a sheep here, a sheep here would start splitting out, and they would literally separate themselves because they recognized the shepherd. The rest of them stayed there. The dramatic, I don't know why this sticks, but I remember one little sheep. I'd never seen such speed. He was coming around the flock toward his shepherd, and his feet were, he couldn't get any traction. And his feet were flying, and he fell several times on his, just breaking his neck to get to the shepherd. All the shepherd had done was to speak, and he heard his voice. And therefore, you've got in this passage that building up. Now, we said that there are three doors. Entrance door, exit door, and these all pertain to Israel. People being saved out of Israel. When you get to verse 9, you have the salvation door. And the significant thing to note is the chapter begins in 10:1 addressing you. Truly I say to you. And that continues until you get down to verse 9. In verse 9, he reestablishes the metaphor, and he opens it up not to you, but to anybody. So verse 9, I am the door. If anyone enters through me, he shall be saved, and go in and out and find pasture. The door metaphor does not apply to salvation until we get to verse 9. Everything before that relates to Jesus' ministry to Israel. Israel is a sheepfold, and we've just had a sheep come out the door in chapter 9, verses 35 through 38. Father, we're thankful for this metaphor of the sheep. We're thankful that your Son came to Israel. He lived and taught your word, and to your word, the majority did not respond.